trend line. Just give me a sec here. Turns on or off, right? Oh, you point and it goes. I got it. Pretty simple. Okay, you know, we've got four sections to look at. The first one was preparation. This section is on analysis. The last two will be on strategy and execution. We're going to introduce probably the primary pattern concept that I work with every day and that I teach and that I see in the market. And call it pattern cycles. Pattern cycles is the underlying machine language of how patterns are created. The markets can only create patterns in so many ways. We all know that stock charts have to move from left to right. We're pretty sure that they don't move. Price doesn't move from right to left. You can only move into the future, and we see the past. And the interface is the hard right edge, which is why I named the site the hard right edge. It's the point where we have to make our decisions as to where the next price bar is going to be. Price also can't go below zero, nor, well, theoretically it can. Can it go to infinity? It can't go up forever. It has to drop at some point. Because of these two tendencies, there's only a finite number of ways the price patterns can be created. They form tops. They form bottoms. They trend. They congest. And they roll over. I mean, there's really nothing else they can do. It goes back to some classic, is it Dow theory, trend theory? You know, a series of rising highs is an uptrend. A series of descending lows is a downtrend. When price moves to a high and stops moving and goes in the other direction, that's a reversal. On the top, when a stock goes to a bottom and then comes back and tests it, it doesn't go any lower, that's a bottom. Go ahead and flip. Seven stages of pattern cycles. Bottoms, breakouts. If I come up with eight, we'll have to excuse me. Bottoms, breakouts, trends, uptrends. Tops, new highs. Stocks can make new highs, but they can make new lows as well. New highs, new lows, and declines. That's all there is, those stages. Stage analysis, I think I originally heard about it from Stan Weinstein, Secrets of Profiting from Bull and Bear Markets. Brilliant concept that's almost never, ever talked about how the market sets up stages through uptrends and downtrends and everything else in between. Our job as traders is to find out the pattern cycle stage within each of our charts and make sure they line up in our favor. The hard part is identifying it. Well, actually, that's the easy part. The easy part is identifying it. You should be able to look at any stock chart, quote unquote, within your time frame. It's very important because it's very relative. And we'll talk about that in a second. And determine what pattern cycle stage that chart is in. Is it in a topping formation? Is it in an uptrend? Is it making a bottom, potential bottom? Let's say potential. Maybe it has to confirm it. Is it breaking down or declining? What stage is that stock chart in? You compare it with the other ones in your on your screen, the one above and the one below. What are they doing? That tells you just about everything you need to know. But pattern cycles and trends are relative. One of the biggest mistakes that we make as traders is something I call trend relativity error, where you go and see opportunity in one time frame but trade it in another. It's a real important concept, so I'll go and rephrase it, or say it again, slowly. You see an uptrend in your time frame, but you don't see a downtrend in the time frame just a little bit longer. You enter that uptrend and uptrend, hold on too long, and become subject to that larger cycle that carries you back into a loss. One of the reasons that we suffer so badly from trend relativity errors is that very few of us define our holding period. To me, that's one of the most important things that you can do as a trader, that you must do as a trader when you create your trading plan, is defining how long you're going to hold your stock if things go right. Now, it's not an inflexible thing, and it's really directed at probably less experienced traders. If you're just coming into the trading thing and you want to be a swing trader, not an investor, you want to be a position trader, not an investor, you want to know where you're going to exit, how long you expect that trade to last before you exit the trade. For me, if I'm intraday trading, I call myself a 30 to 60 minute trader. I've got a holding period. You'd have a 1 to 3 day holding period, 1 to 3 week holding period. When you get more experienced, you can use things like trailing stops. You can understand how pullbacks are affecting your position. You can watch for the change of cycles and defend yourself. But newer traders and less successful traders who are experienced, is that the nice way to say it? Get themselves into a tremendous amount of problems because they don't really know how to apply trailing stops well. They don't know how to protect their positions. And they can avoid a lot of that hassle by just choosing the right holding period and sticking to it and not worrying about trailing stops. I believe in taking single direct moves out of the market as my primary strategy. And really the primary strategy that I teach to other people. You take that price thrust that pushes into that first resistance, get out, take your money, and call it a good day. You don't wait for it to get into the resistance and then see what it's going to do next, because everybody else is going to see the same thing, and then you're going to be in the crowd again, suffering if a reversal takes place. Time and price go together very intimately. If I'm saying I'm a 30 to 60 minute trader on a 5 minute bar, that defines how many bars that I expect. And it's an expectation. I'm trying to be flexible. It's an expectation of in 3 to 5 price bars, I guess that's wrong, in 6 to 8 price bars, price is going to be reaching the price target. And I believe that traders should always have a price. They should have a profit target. They should have a loss target. It's called risk and reward. They should define that. They should look at the chart, be able to tell where that next resistance point's going to be, and there better be enough distance, enough reward in that to make the trade worthwhile. Now, it's very easy to define that. You just don't want a lot of obstacles between where you are, where you're going to enter the trade, and where you want to get out of it. What does price have to pass through for you to get there? And if it's got to pass through a lot of stuff, then you probably should be passing up the trade. Alternatively, a loss target. The lowest risk trade takes point, ideally, in a perfect world. The best trade takes place at the exact same point where you want to exit because you're wrong. Your entry and your exit point, because you're wrong, are the same point. Now, I say that's ideally. Classic definition, you buy on a trend line. The trend line breaks, you're wrong. Since we can't define our entry and exit point as being exactly the same point, you can't enter a trade at 35 and be wrong at 35 on that bar, theoretically, if you've done your homework. But you can place trades in which the point you know you're wrong is so close to the point you enter that you've reduced your risk down to the absolute minimum. I'm not sure. It's such a simple concept, but I'm not sure that everybody sort of sees it the same way. That's what low-risk entry is about. You know, experienced traders manage risk. Inexperienced traders chase gains. Your first job is to manage risk and stay in the game. Your first risk is to manage, your first chore is to manage risk and stay in the game. Don't try to make money. Try to stay alive. Protect capital. Once you learn how to protect capital and manage your risk, then you start working on your profitability solutions. You start working on how do I make my gains, how do I increase my gains, how do I keep my gains. You always want to exit at the point you know you're wrong. That's why you exit. Where's the market on this chart? Well, not this chart, but we'll see some others. where's the market going to tell me I'm wrong? And is my entry point so close to that point that it's a low-risk trade? Again, best way to visualize it in the classic example is price returns to a trend line. I'm going to buy right where that trend line is. Because if the trend line breaks, quarter point, a half a point, I know I'm wrong because the trend line broke. Now, it's an ideal world. In these days, broken trend lines don't mean anything anymore. But that's a classic example. Stages of the pattern cycle, and finding your point defines your opportunity. It defines points. Price bars that, used in conjunction with the 3D charting landscape, locate low-risk entry points for cross-verification. Locate the points from all that Fibonacci stuff and Bollinger Band stuff and moving average stuff slapped on top of the pattern cycles, of the seven stages of the pattern cycle, where they crisscross are your points of opportunity. Now, really, the rest of the next 2.5 hours are just going to talk about that. I think we've covered most of it. Go ahead and flip. Trend lines, classic technical analysis, trend lines. There's a lot more trend lines out there than most of us realize. As we talked about, parallel price channels were a form of trend lines. They really are. There are 2 points. The best thing about them is you only have to have 3 points in a straight line to create a trend line. Trend lines define momentum. They define a point of average momentum. When price is rising away from a trend line, momentum is increasing. When price is falling back toward a trend line, momentum is decreasing. See, we just eliminated the need. If you have a trend line, you eliminated the need to put a momentum indicator under your chart. It's convergence and divergence. Trend line's rising, price is rising away from it, increasing momentum. Question is defining your trend lines. You know, almost any 2 points in the market, any 2 points you can draw a straight line on these days, somebody's trading that point. It's unbelievable. I call them psychotic trend lines. You take an old high and a new low, and somebody draw a line through it, and when price goes back to that point, someone's doing something. You'll see it on time and sales, you know. It's just a little nothing. And I could sit here and draw lines all over that thing, which are 2-point trend lines, just extend out 2 lines. And you'll see that all these price pivots go right off of that line, those lines, when you extend them out. And that it defines a lot of the noise you see in the market. Why are people buying there? Why are they selling there? It doesn't make any sense. And you'll see that these people are making decisions on these nothing lines that are all over the place. Now, psychotic trend lines, 2-point trend lines, are kind of useful in things like cross-verification. If you see that 54 is a perfect price to enter, you know, price is pulling back into a gap at 54. 54 is the former high, and it's sitting right on it in the pullback. It's just 54 is the return to the 20-day moving average. 54 just looks peachy. And then you run a couple psychotic trend lines in there, and they all crisscross at 54. That's a good way to use them. Now, I wouldn't trade at 54 if only those 2-point lines were sitting in there. But it's another way for you to say, wait a second, there's some reality here that supports my decision to enter the trade here at 54. Okay, go ahead, flip. Translating out the trend range axis, learning to see it. I think one of the hardest things to train our eyes is to see what's in front of our noses. You should be able to determine a market stage of a pattern cycle within a half a second. It may come from, you know, I do morning trader at Hard Right Edge, which is daily stock scans, 7 bells. And I have to go through about 600 charts in 45 minutes to do it. And I have a fast computer. And I know what I'm looking at. There's 7 different types of setups I'm looking for, and I'll produce a scan that'll give me like NR7s. And I'll get about 300 NR7s out of that in a typical market day. Well, I'll sit there like this, because I'm only looking for certain kinds. I'm looking for certain patterns. And from my eye to my brain, it takes me about a quarter of a second to go, and then go, yeah. The problem is we can't put that into scans so well. You can't. I could put an NR7 into a scan, but I can't put the, oh yeah, into a scan real well. That's the other side of the brain talking. That's the intuition. The trend range axis, I'm saying axis meaning things flip between trends and range, give you the ability through your eyes to be able to pick that stage out very, very quickly once you train your eye to do it. If you're looking for breakout stocks, you're looking for the end of ranges. If you're looking for swing positions, fade entries, you're looking for the end of trends. It's the interface that takes place between the interface between a range and a trend. This is a Rasky thing. Stole it from her. The interface between a range and a trend is the interface between what's called negative feedback and positive feedback. Right where the market gets dead, flips from non-directional into directional. Right at that interface, the market flips from where oscillators work to where trend following indicators work. Right at that point, it flips from trend into from a range. If I get this right, I'll confuse everybody. From a range into a trend. The flip from positive feedback into negative feedback. Huge climax reversal day. Market flipping from positive feedback into negative feedback. March 10th, whatever the day was. Wherever the top was. The end of a trend, market flips from directional into non-directional. Non-directional being sideways, range-bound. Markets don't go from uptrends to downtrends, and from downtrends to uptrends. They go from uptrends to sideways markets to downtrends to sideways markets to uptrends. Very rare for a market to go from an uptrend to a downtrend, you know, on a dime to flip. In between, the market goes from positive feedback to negative feedback. During the trend following indicators, MACD histograms, momentum indicators, moving averages, measure the trend. Market flips from positive feedback to negative feedback. Throw away the momentum indicators. Pull out your stochastics. Pull out your RSI. Use the price bar congestion to determine how far into the range and where the market might get dull again and get ready. You know, we talked about when indicators lie. Momentum indicators lie in range-bound markets. Trend-following indicators lie in trends. Classic lie. Stochastic goes to overbought in a trending market. Overbought is the wrong term because it goes to overbought and just stays there. If it flips to that point where it's overbought and you go, well, it's overbought, I need to sell, but the market just keeps on going higher because the indicator is worthless in that situation. Let's flip. Learning to see the landscape. Yeah, there are a few psychotic trend lines here. And depending on how much time you have, you start with the major features. You have to start with the major features. We only have so many hours in the day. You start with the most obvious things of the landscape. And often, you know, highs and lows, major highs and lows, major moving averages, that's as far as you need to go. But as you start to develop some finesse, as you start to look for opportunity in places you may not have seen it before, you want to apply more and more tools and specific tools. Sometimes it'll be wacky little trend lines that show support resistance. Sometimes it might be a Bollinger Band set in a different setting. Over time, and as you learn your tools, you know, the analogy I use, the cabinet maker wants to build a cabinet. The trader wants to turn a profit. As that cabinet maker's building the cabinet, he's got to decide, or she has to decide, which tools to use for which particular functions, whether they're doing this part of the cabinet, or that part of the cabinet, or that part of the cabinet. If the cabinet maker pulls out a big bandsaw or a big huge saw to try to cut a really delicate little piece of wood, it doesn't work. The trader has to learn their tools well enough so they know which tools need to be applied to the landscape at any particular time, need to be applied to the price bars at any particular time. And one of the ways they determine, the most important way they determine, which tools need to be applied is to find your stage in the pattern science. You're going to apply certain tools during ranges, certain tools during trends, certain tools during topping bottoms and bottoming markets. Flip, please. Flip again. Okay. Let's take a look at a little anatomy of a topping market and try to break it down a little bit. Classic topping market as illustrated by a descending triangle. Topping markets don't give up easily. One of the biggest mistakes the traders make is they try to sell short into a top way too early. It goes back to this thing about how when a market tops doesn't mean the trend has changed. It's no longer. It doesn't mean that an uptrend's ended and a downtrend's begun. Instead, reality is that an uptrend has ended and a sideways market's begun. But when traders see a top, very often they jump into a short sale very, very early. And they usually, if they do that, they get crushed. Right at the peak, where volumes are highest, volatility spikes very, very strongly, and price prediction becomes very, very difficult. Most of the time, most traders should stay away from that point if they're trading off a daily chart. You know, an intraday trader probably could find an opportunity in there. This is one of the most dangerous spots. See, this is positive feedback here. This is negative feedback starting on this bar. I don't think you really can confirm it's negative feedback until this gap right here is broken. I think that tells you the top's in for sure. You have enough information to tell you that's an exhaustion gap right there when that gap crushes on an expansion bar. But even when you get to this point here, there are just tons and tons of people who expect InfoSeek to go to new highs. That's why it's so difficult to short early and why you need to be patient and wait and sit back. Topping processes have to work out of the system. They've got to work out volatility like any range. They have to evolve into quiet points. They have to get dull. They've got to work out investor supply and demand before the market can actually break into a new positive feedback stage, this time in the other direction. Go ahead and flip. Again. Bottoming patterns. It's really, bottoms and tops don't form the same way. One's driven by greed, one's driven by fear. Now, if you're not sure which is which, tops are driven by greed, bottoms are driven by fear. Or is it the other way around? No, yeah, that's the right way. Bottoms take longer to form than tops. Markets tend to fall more quickly than they rise. At a bottom, no one wants to touch a stock except the value people who are very, very patient. At a top, very few people have patience. They're not patient with their short positions. They want to sell short and make money right away. A classic form of bottoms, a rounded bottom. Rounded bottoms are extremely boring for traders. If you're an investor, it's a lot more exciting. I think we have a little bit more exciting bottoms coming up, double bottoms and things. So let's go ahead and flip. Yeah, this is what I call an Adam and Eve bottom. And you may have noticed that Adam and Eve is an illustration of a sharp first low followed by a second low, a much lower volatility that takes up more price bars. Very classic bottoming pattern. You may have noticed two or three slides back on the descending triangle. That was an Adam and Eve top, exactly the same thing. And it's something you should be looking for, and it's a real good analogy for how bottoms and tops are formed. Highs and lows are generally formed on very high volatility. They're generally tested on much lower volatility. And as volatility works out of the system and things become dull, then a move can take place. This is an example on a five-minute chart. Happens almost every day. The question is, where does the trader find opportunity? And they need to compile different pieces of the charting landscape in order to pick where the uptrend is going to begin and where they can safely enter. Brendan Flynn. This is probably the most common form of bottom these days. They're bottoms that aren't really bottoms. They're bottoms that are made on lower lows. If you know anything about the 2B trade, the 2B, I think, was first talked about by Vic Sparandeo in Methods of a Wall Street Master. And 2B is a very classic, what I call, failure trade. And you see it constantly in the market. The market just cannot make a double bottom on a higher low these days. Every time it wants to make a bottom, it goes and takes out the last low before it reverses. It's become so typical. See, if this is our low, price should reverse right at that point and go higher. But there's just so much greed in the market that there's so much opportunity to pull prices lower and scare the people who think this low has been violated. You see the 2B, and we probably have some more examples of it. It's a way that insiders get back at common knowledge because common knowledge expects a higher bottom on the second low, so they're not willing to give it to them. Now, you as a trader, your opportunity lies in being patient, as it often does, in stepping in behind the crowd. Because one of the best buy signals in the world is when this price rises above that low. See what happens when it hits that low? See that little breakout point right there? That tells you the downtrend's ended on one bar. I love it. It's conspiratorial, but I don't really mean it that way. There's absolutely no supply down here because they've taken out the supply of the market, supply of fearful people who want to sell by doing this. Those people are gone. The market can float up because they've taken out, they've oversold it. Go ahead and flip. You know, we tend to want to jump in with the crowd. The market constantly gives us a second opportunity to get into a good trade. Better off sleeping late in the morning, turning on your screen about 11 in the morning to find out all the problems you could have gotten into in the first 90 minutes and then make your decisions. Market breaks down, it almost always pulls back to the point of the breakdown or the breakout. That's the point where you want to jump into the trade. We talked about how your lowest risk is close to the point where you know you're wrong. When price pulls back to a breakout, if it keeps on going back into the old range, you know you're wrong. You're in a breakdown. Price breaks down below the last low, pulls back. Now, if price keeps on going, closes that gap or goes above that high, that low over there, you know you're wrong a lot easier than if you go and try to sell it short on the first bar. You sell it short on the first bar, you're in trouble. You've got to be patient and wait for the market to give you that late opportunity. It's not always going to happen. One of your most important skills is to learn when, is to accept when you miss things. You're going to miss things constantly. You've got to adjust your timing so that you're willing to miss things most of the time in order to take the opportunities that come to you, the ones that are handed to you on a silver platter. Pullbacks, for the most part, are handed to you on a silver platter. If you respond to the crowd, you're going to get crushed with them. If you take your time and let the, on this particular case, small little short squeeze to develop, one of the best points to sell short is at the end of a short squeeze. I mean, that's common sense, I think. But it's so hard for us because it's so counterintuitive with our emotional nature. Our emotional nature wants to act and react with everybody else around us. We want to be proven right by those around us. And those around us during the trading day are all the other traders. So we want to see what they're doing before we decide what we're going to do. Generally, profit and discomfort stand side by side. The more uncomfortable you are about making a trade, that's probably the most successful trade you're going to make. When you feel real good about something, that's when you got to watch yourself. That's when it's extremely dangerous. Go ahead and flip. One more time, please. Reading the landscape. This is something called clear air. You want to find where your opportunities, where your profits are. If you look back in the past, to what a stock chart did the last time it crossed a certain price area. When price expands through certain